Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
And we are live. So there we go. Welcome to a Coffee with Karen, cup of positivity with just a sprinkling of woo-woo, although the sprinkling is getting bigger and bigger as we progress. So I think today we're going to have a good few tablespoons again. So no more sprinkling. Your host, my name's Karen Roberts. I suppose I would call myself a holistic transformation coach. I help other coaches, healers, get their businesses online and actually get paid their worth. Because what we tend to find is a lot of these coaches or healers are very good at giving and not so good at receiving. So each week, my guests will discuss a topic of their choice, either from a mental, a physical, or spiritual perspective. But what tends to be the case is that really, even sometimes unknowingly, they are focusing on a more holistic approach and focusing on all areas. So my guest this week, I'm actually really looking forward to this conversation. He's got a fantastic story, really. So Kevin, if you could explain or share with the listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do, and yeah, share your story, please.
Kevin, only my mother calls me that when I'm in trouble.
Oh, sorry, Kev.
Am I in trouble?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Might be after this, yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah, so I'm Kev Bailey. I was working under the banner of Connected Therapies, and now it's the Uncommon Heartfelt Touch, because I feel that more describes what I do at the moment and apparently what I may be doing in the future, because I keep being told by mediumistic friends and others that everything's going to be changing and going up a gear. So it'll be getting even more woo-woo.
Fantastic. Love that. Yeah, when? I think a lot of people are waiting.
Wow.
But share with everybody how this all came about, where you started.
All right. Okay. So let's go all the way back 60 years into my childhood, where I was probably quite spiritual, but obviously didn't realize it. I used to love being out in nature. I'm one of these people that can go up to most animals, even vicious dogs, and stroke them without any issues and things like that. But unfortunately, I got bullied at school in England. And then my parents decided to emigrate to South Africa, and I got bullied at school there as well. And also in the block of flats we lived by another English lad that was living there with us. So my parents eventually decided to come back to England because they couldn't handle the violence and stuff that was going on, because it was apartheid years in South Africa when we were there. And my father, in his wisdom, decided to enroll me in an all-boys school. And I thought, oh, I'm not going to get bullied here. So I became the school nutter. So I wasn't necessarily fighting and things like that. That wasn't my MO, but the school kindly taught us how to make chlorine gas in the chemistry lab. So on a Friday afternoon, the lads would have a whip round and I'd sneak up into the chemistry lab and make chlorine gas, but I would leave the fume covered door open and all the doors in the school, so the school filled with chlorine gas. And lo and behold, we had to go home early. Or I'd sneak up there and pour a whole bottle of potassium or sodium down the sink. And if you don't know, it catches light when it hits water. And so they would have to call the fire brigade out and again close the school. So we'd all have to go home early on a Friday. So my father was always called down the school. The punishments got harsher and harsher. So first of all, it was just a slap across the backside, and then it was the belt, and then it was a cane, and then I used to get punched every now and again. He was an ex-military policeman. His father had treated him the same, so he didn't really know any better. However, I continued to rebel against him. When I got that bad, I was actually hanging around with biker gangs in Plymouth and all sorts, and I went the full whole hog until one day my father and I, he was punishing me. He was hitting me in the stomach and dropping me and then picking me back up by the ear and dropping me. And he went to do it a third time and I hit him and I knocked him across the kitchen and he went, "Oh, okay, he's getting a bit big now, isn't he?" And I went, "Wow, I never realised I could do that." But then about 6 months later, he asked me to move home. So I moved back up to London. I moved in with my gran, who happened to have some mental health issues that we found out after she'd passed. But I couldn't handle staying with her because I'd got to know a Sikh guy who I was working with who used to come around the house. And while he was there, he was the nicest bloke in the world. But once he'd gone, my gran used to call him all sorts of not very nice things. So anyway, I left and he said, "Why don't I go and move in with him?" So I did. I moved in with a Sikh family for probably about a year and a half. Started off with his mother and then moved in with his sister and her husband until I joined the army. I don't know why I joined the army. I'm an Aquarian. I don't like rules and regulations, but hey, here we go. And so I joined the Rimi for 12 and a half years, sorry. And in that term, I learned a trade, but also the army channeled all this aggression and whatever you want to call it that I was getting into a positive way. People, if they do remember the program Soldier Soldier, well, I was Tucker. I was the one that was always in trouble when doing things in the army and getting up to all these pranks and stuff like that. So the army was probably quite glad after 12 and a half years when I left. I left because I wasn't very fit towards the end of my army career. I'd spent 7 years in Germany and drinking like a goldfish and smoking like a train and because it was all cheap over there. And then I got posted back to the paratroopers in Aldershot, who happened to be one of the fittest regiments in the British Army, meeting one of the unfittest soldiers in the British Army. So I volunteered for Northern Ireland so we could part company. I'd done 2 years in Northern Ireland and then I found out that the paras were coming back to Northern Ireland since the first time since Bloody Sunday. And so I thought, I can't handle these again. So I signed off and got out.
Right.
Within about 6 months of getting out, I took up martial arts. I became super fit. I was doing martial arts nearly every day of the week, started teaching it, et cetera, et cetera. And I was working for a packaging company just outside London who promoted me and moved me to a new branch that they'd opened in the Midlands. Unfortunately, that didn't quite work out. So we parted company. I then ran a pub. And it was during the time I was running the pub that my father and I had repaired our relationship and we started to get on very good terms. And then he decided to pop his clogs and go home. So he didn't realize it, but he had heart issues, which gave him septicemia. And he kept collapsing in pain with a bad back. And eventually we had to turn off the life support machine. Oh. So that made me really, really angry that we just repaired our relationship. And then he's gone and exited stage right. So I was also running a pub at the time and trying to keep the Powder Your Nose Brigade out and the Village Idiots, which was also winding me up and making me angry. So I had a conversation. Well, no, I started off with a book review and it was Lorna Byrne's Angels in Your Hair. So normally I wouldn't read book reviews and I certainly wouldn't read one about angels. But anyway, I asked my ex-wife to go and get me it as she was going into town. She thought I'd fallen down the stairs and banged my head, but hey. So I didn't. I read it and it got me quite emotional. There were some quite poignant things that she'd written. And then I had a conversation with somebody in my pub about the book. And she said, "Oh, I know a bloke that can come down and sort you out." So a medium called Shane Darby came down to do a rescue job on me. And while the pub was shut, we were sat in a back room and there was me, my dead dad and Shane, and we were all blubbering because we could all feel the emotions and knew what was being said and stuff like that. he was a bit too far away to go to his meditation classes, because I'd learned a little bit about meditation doing martial arts. So I then had another conversation in the pub with somebody else who says, oh, my mate goes to a place down the road. So I went to a lady called Sally Wathen's meditation nights. And after about the third or the fourth thing, me being a total skeptic and disbeliever, started to see and feel things. And I went, ooh, there is a little bit more to life than you think. Yeah, you've been a bit of a prat. So I continued to do the meditation nights, but she also taught spiritual healing, kinesiology, and crystal healing. So I spent about 6 years training with her. And I also went to the Corinthian church to get a bit more hands-on experience of spiritual healing. However, I knew I had an issue with my dad still. My granddad, my dad, and myself were all in jobs which, although it was well paid at Rolls-Royce, I felt it was a bit dead end and I wasn't going anywhere. And they were in the similar jobs, but coming up to retirement, so they couldn't really leave and find something else. So they were also both in marriages that weren't particularly good. If you remember my gran, apparently she was schizophrenic. So my granddad was putting up with that. My mum had her issues that my dad was putting up with. And then I was in a marriage that I had issues that I was kind of putting up with as well. And so I got recommended to go and see a lady called Jeannie Rogers near Banbury, who's a shamanic healer. So I went, and when I got there, she picked up on my heart issues, because both my dad and my granddad died of heart issues. And so it felt like she had a 12-inch red hot knitting needle and she was shoving it through my heart for about 5 minutes, and it was absolute agony. But after that, the heart cleared.
Wow.
She then done 3 soul retrievals on me, one to a young girl I had when I first joined the army, a girlfriend. One of my dad, he had a part of my soul and I had a part of his, and we had to swap it. And then there was one swimming out to sea at the time, and that was my marriage breaking up. So anyway, she brought those back. And then I said I wanted to break the chain of the granddad, dad, and then me going the same way. So she made me journey to the Hall of Akashic Records, where I met this guy, Jesus, looking with all the beard and the robes. And he brought a parchment, and I signed it, he signed it, and I gave him a pearl as payment, on the proviso that when I came back to reality, I would give a pearl. So a couple of months later, I went down the local river and I'd done a bit of a ceremony and I chucked a pearl in the river. And then as I was driving home, I got about halfway home and I got pushed in my third eye right back into my car seat. And I went, what the? And then I realized, because I don't do subtle, that they're giving me the message that I've just fulfilled my side of the bargain, so they're going to fulfill theirs. And so I still had the heart issue. I had a bypass 2 years ago, but it didn't kill me.
Right.
So now I can carry on to do whatever it is I've got to do. I've had another health scare recently with a bit of pneumonia and pleurisy, thanks to our friend COVID. But I also, the emotion behind that was still linked to the heart stuff and the fact that I hadn't let the emotion go. So with the two of them together, I had to really sit down and have a look at my emotional crap and go through it and learn why I've manifested the health issues that I have. And I hope I've learned the lesson, because I don't want another one. I don't want another hospital trip.
No.
So I can move on. So basically, wow, that's my story.
That's pretty incredible story. You've been through quite a journey there, and obviously a lot of generational stuff going on. But for you to actually be aware of that, I mean, what do you think? So the thing that sparked this off, you just said that it was this book. What, yes, can you remember? What triggered? What made you even want to purchase? What was it that got you interested?
I really don't know, but I'm sure it was spirit giving me a slap round the ear hole and saying, oi, read that,
Well, I was going to say something, something like you say, you weren't interested in that kind of thing. You've gone into the army. You've done this, that and the other. I mean, I know martial arts, there's a yin and a yang, so they can be a little bit spiritual, but not always. So going from, you know, and running a pub, that's not your normal, you know, if there ever is a normal, but you know, it's not the usual way into this arena. So for you to go through all of that, know that you've got to do some healing yourself, which is all linked to what you've gone through as a family. And then to really go, I mean, it's not just everybody that, you know, goes in, starts looking at the Akashic records. For stars, for the listeners out there who are going, what on earth is that? So we might have sort of jumped a few hurdles here.
Yeah.
So can you explain to the listeners, number one, let's talk about just spiritual healing for a moment. How would you explain that to people if they haven't really come across this? Because we're going into quite a bit of the woo-woo side of things.
Okay, so when I did go to Jeannie Rogers, I ended up becoming her unofficial apprentice as a shamanic healer. I used to invite her up to do, because I'd already started to do kinesiology and stuff part-time. So I used to start inviting her up to help me with my harder clients. So I did her shamanic course, and then I would be in the room with her and help her and assist her to do things that she may need to do on a client, like remove entities and things like that. So it was quite interesting. So I don't call myself a shaman, but I do use shamanic techniques to help people heal. But coming back to your main point, the Akashic Records is a library of everything that has ever happened in the world over the whole of its history. And it's recorded there. It's in, I don't know what you want to call it, another dimension maybe. It's a place that if you can raise your vibration, you can go and visit yourself and get information and things like that. If you can't, then maybe you need to go and visit somebody who is able to have that gift and go and do it for you. Mm-hmm. Spiritual healing, Reiki, whatever you want to call it, is all about using universal energies. And I've just read a book recently where this lady's been channeling Jesus, and Jesus calls it the adamantine particle, and that you can tap into that energy. And as a healer, I think what it is, we transform the energy, because otherwise it'd be too powerful to put into the client. And so then we transfer it to the client in the transformed way, so that the client can benefit from it. I've been told that I can nip bone, change DNA, and clean blood. I've been told that. I couldn't tell you for certain whether that's what I do or not, but I think what it means by I don't change DNA, I rather change RNA, which is the messenger DNA.
Yeah.
So if your body has been given a garbled message about what it wants to repair and how it wants to repair it, and it's then sending the RNA to that place to do the repair, I correct the message. So when it gets there, it does what it's supposed to do. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's basically what I'm doing there. I used to think that there was, when I started to heal, an entity was coming into me to help me to heal. But I've since been educated that what they're doing, because I kind of get pulled back initially, and it's like they're putting the energy into my body and charging me up like an electrical capacitor. And then when I reached the level I'm supposed to be at, they release me, and then I can move forward and I put my hands on the client and start to transfer the energy.
Right. So you really are a channel. Really, yeah. You're a channel. I mean, I do totally believe that everybody has the capacity to heal themselves, but they are not aware of how to. So yes. Someone like you coming along, and yes, it's working with and through you, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Which is working with and through.
So I couple the energy healing with crystals. I have a crystal grid under my therapy couch. I put some smoky quartz crystals about the size of house bricks because I'm not very subtle. I'm a bloke on the wall. They go between their ankles to help take negative energies away. But then I normally ask people their journeys to find out what trauma and stuff that they've been through. And then in a shamanic way, in a safe environment, I take them back to go and revisit it and take their power back from people. And then they get to say whatever it is they really wanted to say and all the things that they didn't say. And when I ask them to do that, they do it in their head because it's none of my business. Right. And that way as well, they don't hold back on what it is they're saying. And if it's somebody who's done something really nasty to them, I shall probably give them an etheric baseball bat as well. So they can give them a good hiding because it's all about letting that anger go.
Yes.
And then I ask them to forgive them. And they're not forgiving them for the assailant's sake, but for theirs. Mm-hmm. And then forgive themselves for because they might have picked the dodgy husband that knocked them about, or they might have agreed to do X, Y, Z that put them in a dodgy predicament. Yeah. So it's all about that. And sometimes people are also they're carrying guilt forward because they didn't warn others about the perpetrator and then somebody else got attacked by them or something like that. So right. All of these people, everything's different and there's no judgment. I believe before we come here, we sign a soul contract. And so we agree to invite people into our life to help us experience whatever it is our soul needs to learn to grow. And so enter stage left, your rapist, your abuser, or whatever they might be, the event happens and then they exit stage right and you're left this blubbery mess in the middle because you've forgotten what you've agreed to with your guides and guardian angels and your higher self.
Yeah.
And it's all about then trying to step back from the drama to realize the lesson. And once you do that and you've recognized what it was that you wanted to learn in the first place, technically it should all go away. And so should any associated illness with it.
Right.
So, for instance, recently I'd done a lady who has been in pain for about 20 years with fibro or ME or whatever it is that they want to label it.
Mm-hmm.
She was abused as a child and then a nephew of hers got abused by the same person. And the guilt of her not saying anything and therefore subjecting the nephew to the similar experience had eaten her up and caused most of her pain. And then a niece had a child and she felt then that she needed to go and warn her about this family member.
Right.
And then she came to see me. And when we done all the work, it wasn't so much what she'd actually experienced and been through. It was that guilt of not doing that warning. And when she released it, about 2 days later, she rang the lady who organises my day for me. And she said most of her pain had gone.
Wow.
So it was like she'd been in the gym holding this heavy barbell for 20 years.
Yeah.
And finally put it down.
Right.
And her body probably at first got a wobble on because it's been so used to holding it. But then when she realized and put it down and processed it, she started to release her pain. And she's been back to see me since. So we've had to do some more pain release and healing on the last little bit that's left.
Right.
So now we can start doing physical things with kinesiology, like reset her stomach. We've already taken her out of fight and flight and things like that. So we can get really on the road to wellness.
Right. I mean, it sounds like it's just there is such a process to this. And it makes so much sense. I've always said to those people that I've met or people I know, even family members, where I think the reason you've got that is all bottling things up.
Yes.
Emotions.
Yeah.
And suppressing things is going to have to manifest through the body as some kind of ailment. And it's just quite interesting that pretty much everybody I speak to, whether they're more on the mental, the physical, you know, maybe not so much on the woo-woo side, but it's all linked. Yeah. The fact is that the body is going, you know, something's going to happen. You cannot have those such strong emotions, feelings and emotions that are not going to do, especially if it's been held onto for so long.
I can't remember the author, but there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score.
Yes, I haven't read it. In fact, actually, that reminds me, I think I need to get it. I have heard about that quite a few times. Yes.
Yes.
The body is the physical.
Yeah.
You know, this is the body's in the physical reality, this current reality that we're in, but everything that's driving it is coming from. And you know, if only people could really have an understanding of that, because it's funny that you say so much about the, you know, guilt. Guilt, yes, and shame seem to be the most damaging, yes, of emotions. And it seems like there's so many people that are carrying these burdens around with them, and there really isn't any need. If people were aware, isn't it funny? Don't you find it's funny that we sort of seem to have come here? It's almost like that's the challenge, is to, yes, remember who you are, remember how powerful you are, and, yes, what you can achieve. And we come into this realm and forget it all and get caught up in the stories, yes, of it all. And just some but people.
You ladies are a bit more luckier than us blokes, because most of you are more readily able to admit and release. Whereas us, yes, blokes are programmed that to admit anything, it's a weakness. Yeah. And so we bottle it up even more so, because we're supposed to be big and hard, and showing a weakness is detrimental.
Absolutely.
But it is detrimental with the fact that the weakness is that you're not realizing and releasing it and just making yourself ill.
100%. And I think that's so clear with what has gone on in the last couple of years,
yes,
the incredibly sad state of affairs, where so many men have just not been able to cope with what's gone on, and have sadly seen they've believed or perceived that there is no way out, and unfortunately have done things that, oh, yes, if only they knew that there's a way out, you know, and you're right, us women, we're chatting.
So either they commit a dodgy deed, which I think you're alluding to, or they become addicted, whether it's blokes or women, and it could be food. Sometimes it's even not eating, so anorexia or bulimia, because they want to try and make themselves look ugly so the next bloke doesn't come along and do the same thing, or they're going to make themselves look fat and horrible, whatever it might be. It may be their comfort eating, and they're trying to put the sweetness back in their life. But equally, it could be drink, drugs, whatever, gambling. It's all a way of taking their mind off of their own reality, exactly, so they don't have to go and deal with it. So people who perhaps judge people who have a drink or a drug problem might want to look a bit deeper and see why that person, what their story is, how that came about. We don't know. I mean, there's a music that was written by a guy called Stuart Sharp, and it's called the Angeli Symphonies. They've taken it off of YouTube at the minute, because I think they're trying to make the film the story of his life. But it was used in a couple of in one of Spielberg's movies, the one with Meg Ryan. I think it was John Revolting or whatever. They were angels and they swapped places or whatever. Angeles thing. But he was a successful businessman, and then he lost his daughter, I believe, in a car accident, and then he went on drink, and then his marriage split up and his business failed, and he ended up on the streets outside one of the tube stations in London when the director of the London Philharmonic was walking past. And he could hear him humming this music. And he said to him, "Where'd you get that from?" He said, "Oh, it's in my head." But apparently it broke musical laws. I mean, I'm not a musician, so I don't know. So he says, "Oi, you, come with me." And they went away and they wrote the score to all this music that was in his head.
Wow. And
then he started to reverse his life conditions, because obviously Spielberg paid him for the two tunes that he used in the film and so on, and he was getting his life back together.
Right.
And unfortunately, he died recently. I had a friend, she was visiting a bookshop in Melton Mowbray, and as she was walking around the bookshop, this book pushed itself out on the shelf at her. And so she just slapped it and pushed it back in and then carried on walking around, and then it done it again. And she went, "Get in." So, and then the third time she was rushing back to the till to pay and the book fell on the floor in front of her. So she went, "Oh, bloody hell," just picked it up and paid for it. But when she got outside and looked at it, it was Stuart Sharp's autobiography. And he'd put on it to Steven Spielberg, etc.
Oh, wow.
So she tried to contact Spielberg and got no answer. But she did manage to contact Stuart Sharp. And I couldn't go, but she went to meet him in Leicester Square and talk about what had happened, about his book and stuff like that. And he was going to give her a ticket to his film premiere. But then, unfortunately, because of his death, it never happened.
Oh.
But I was so envious that she'd gone and met Stuart Sharp. And I've been listening to his music for like 10 years. And then that story had come out. And it's just amazing. All these, well, we know there's no such thing as coincidences, but all these things that led her.
And there you go. Like how you were led to that book. You know, these are the things that I find so fascinating. Because when we look back, if I look back at life in general, more often than not, it's just the things that have come out of nowhere that have had a huge, huge impact. Not necessarily the things that we think we have controlled. Does that make any sense? It's always the things when you're in the flow, things happen. Like you said, conversations, like you said earlier, a conversation with someone in the pub led you to the guy that came. You know, they never seem to come through us trying to almost force things to happen. It's always some random conversation here or there, or seen a book or something like that. And that's the universe working with them.
I've just kind of written a blog about that, about will and intent. And where you may force a will on somebody else or yourself because you think you want to achieve that, or maybe your parents are trying to make you be a solicitor or a doctor or something like that, and so you're following their will, mm-hmm. but it's making you unhappy. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you sit back and put your intent out there but don't actually force and will anything, because what you think you need and what the universe knows you need
knows better.
Different things, yes. So if you just put the intent out there, and if it fits in with your soul contract and universal laws, no doubt it will happen. It may not happen as quickly as you wish it will, or in the way that you think it was going to happen, but it does happen. I mean, I've always fancied having a crow as a pet. And then I went and visited a friend who had a jackdaw that had fallen out of the nest before it fledged. And so he was feeding it and it became silly tame. And there's a picture of it sat on my head. And then when I was working at Rolls Royce one night, there was a crow that's obviously it's time to pass, but the other crows were having a go at it. So I just picked it up and I was wandering around Rolls Royce factory with this crow on my shoulder all shift. And then when I went home, I just put the crow in a safe place, and then obviously it passed. But it saved it, I suppose. I know nature, they were probably cleaning up because they're carrion eaters anyway, but at least it had a quiet death instead of a violent one.
Right.
But I got my wish both times.
I've
not had a pet crow, but it was as close as the universe was going to give me.
Right.
And then recently, lots of people have been telling me, "You need to connect with Merlin magic." And I went, "Yeah, all right, well, what's that then?" And then I was driving up the M1 once and for my son, and this lorry moved over and there's this big white van with Merlin magic written all over the side of it. And I went, "All right, okay, yeah, don't do subtle, so yeah, I'll get any hint." And then recently there was a gentleman, I can only pronounce his first name because it's he's had to change it to an Icelandic name for whatever reason. But so his name's Ivor, and he was doing a talk on Merlin magic in Nottingham. So along I went, listened to his talk. Apparently he's ex-forces. He's an ex-para. Oh, dear.
Right, another one.
But I'm going to go and visit him soon because he's obviously a druid priest, but he's also a medium and stuff as well. And I'm hoping that he can shed some enlightenment on the next phase of my story and where I'm supposed to be going with this Merlin magic and stuff. So,
watch this space.
It's just absolutely magic. The things that have happened recently, I think because of my illnesses and stuff, it's all about compression. Yeah, and it's making you look at yourself and have to go inward and things like that. And then because I've done that and a few other circumstances recently, all of a sudden it's expansion.
So things are moving fast.
Yeah, and I'm starting to learn new things. My healing's changing already and stuff like that. And it's just absolutely amazing.
And that's because you've taken the time out to do the inner work.
Yes. Yes. We have to, and I have to go to other people to help me. Like I went to Jeannie Rogers that time, and I've been to a lady called Stacey Keast, who's another shamanic healer, and she's had to do things to help me to release my past so I can move forward.
Right.
But some of the things that these people tell me I have been doing in my past is amazing. Going back to Atlantis and things like that, and I'm going, really? Okay. Yeah. You know, but I don't disbelieve
anything. So do you know how many past lives you've had?
Apparently I've been around quite a bit, and I've had, you know, probably, I don't know, a couple of hundred or something like that.
Right.
You're supposed to be able to tell if you fold your, I don't know if you can see it, but you fold your thumb into your hands and all the creases down the line of your thumb are all the past lives you've had.
Oh.
So you've been around a bit as well then, have you?
Why do you say that? Where did that come from? I have been told that yes, I've been there a few times before.
because it's funny. There's a few people in my life that I've been told I've had a life with back in Atlantis, and we were healers back then, and we'd done this, that, and the other, and stuff. So, again, unfortunately, up until now, I can't connect like that. I can connect when I'm healing and I get messages about how to heal people, but I'd love to be able to connect, and maybe this is my next stage, to get higher knowledge and things like that, and to remember what I can do and how I can do it. Because it was like my mum, she's recently passed. However, when she was here, she was confined to a chair or a bed and in a nursing home. But I used to go down, and because she was still compass mentis, and say, "Mother, do you want a healing?" She used to say, "You think you're bloody Jesus, you are, but you ain't, you know." And I'd say, "Well, you don't want a healing then, Mother?" And she said, "Yeah, go on then." And then once, the last time I went down, her hands are really painful with arthritis. And I used a couple of crystals and got her to put her hands on top of them. And then when I said, "Right, Mother, it's switched off now, we're finished," she nicked the crystals and wouldn't give them back. So she did know what was going on. But she, since she's passed, I've had a few messages now from mediums, and she's come back and said, "You don't know the half of what you can do." You know what I mean? And I'm going, "Well, you want to elaborate on that, Mother, and tell me," but they're not allowed, are they? You've got to find out for yourself. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, love that. Well, I mean, and that's what it just seems to be. That's our thing, is to figure it out ourselves. And the only way we can do that is by going inwards. And I find it so, the whole thing, it totally intrigues me. Look, I come from a very physical side of, you know, my whole life, adult life, was in the, all to do with physical fitness and healing on a physical side of things, you know, sports therapy. There was no woo-woo involved. I'm sure there was naturally, intuitively. I could always sense, I knew exactly where the pain was, whether it was because I was doing it for so long or I was starting to sort of tune in. But I just find it just so you know, the missing link, you know. I mean, I joke about even this whole show calling it, you know, and it's just a sprinkling of woo-woo, whereas the reality is that it is a woo-woo, but we've just become so separated from it all when we're only focusing on the physical. And that seems to be the sad thing with, and I don't want to upset anybody with religion or anything, but it seems like that there has been this missing part. That
I do think that the powers that be have interfered with our free will to program us to be separate and divisive, whether it's race, religion, creed, whatever it might be. And now they're using gender. If you look at new housing estates, it's all drive on, drive off, and you perhaps only talk to your neighbours and nobody else. Whereas in the old days, it used to be community and everybody knew everybody, sometimes to your detriment. But however, if you were in trouble, most of the community used to help you. Yeah. And so that's what they're doing.
Separating the elderly from the children. Yeah. Everything is all...
And I even think that's why they're closing pubs, because they don't want you in there plotting the next revolution. You know what I mean? So
there's... I would agree. They don't, the whole thing with the last couple of years has all been about separation, hasn't it? Keeping everybody from, you know, mixing with anybody else, you know, the whole six, you know, it's all been to,
and what we really need to do is to get back together and get that unity and start talking and having a bit more empathic things about people and what they've been through and what they believe in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I went to visit a friend the other day and I happen to believe that what Putin's doing is not necessarily all bad. And he was adamant that Putin's compared him to Hitler and Genghis Khan and all that and threatened to throw me out of his house if I carried on talking about it. But that's fine. That's his belief. That's what he wants to believe. But perhaps he could have been a bit more empathic towards my belief. But that's the way it goes.
That's what I do think. That's what is needed. A little bit more empathy, more compassion.
Yes.
And the fact that we're all linked. We are all one. There's one human race. No matter how many times they try to divide us and get people angry just because the way they do things is different. And it is quite interesting that
but people don't realize either that the anger, when you send that thought form at somebody, or I hate you or whatever, you are actually harming them. I have to take darts and arrows and swords sometimes out of people that somebody else has put there because they've been jealous of them or they've hated them or whatever it might be. And you're wandering around, you don't even know it's there, but eventually it starts to cause physical ailments in your body. Everything starts in your aura first and then manifests in your body. So the idea is to keep your aura and everything clear, and then it never manifests, you know. But unfortunately, there's people going out and doing this. And I've just written about this as well, where the pagan saying is, do as you will, but harm none. But you really have to think about that harm none. And some of these people that are doing spells and things on other people, you're interfering with people's free will. And I do think that that's going against natural law. And at some point, karma's going to catch up with you and it's going to come back to you. And why do you want to go around hurting everybody anyway? Why not go around helping people and trying to get them to understand what it is that you feel that they're upsetting you about or something like that? Maybe go and sow seeds in conversations. You know, what if you thought of doing it this way, you know, do you not think that might be better or something like that? And then just leave it and let them go away and think about it and then see if they can work it out for themselves.
And then
your job is not to do their journey for them, but is to help perhaps guide them onto the right path so they can go and do it themselves.
And that really is the thing. I think it is. It just seems a shame that we haven't been taught this stuff, you know, throughout school. And again, we'll go back to
that. In school, we should be doing all of this. Yeah. But it's the programming, isn't it? They don't want us to know.
Again, it's all down to the conditioning. Yes. So that they've because what an amazing place. I mean, in one generation, you know, the kids grew up, and I do think there are some good coming out of this, where, you know, I've been speaking to some previous guests where they're setting up, you know, like homeschooling, but now they're starting set up more community schooling where they are teaching meditation, they are teaching mindfulness to the kids. So imagine what an amazing place this would be in one generation, you know, if the children were...
They don't even teach you life skills, though, at school, do they? How to open a bank account, how to do this, how to do that. No offence to historians, but remembering what king reigned from what to what, as far as I'm concerned, unless you're interested, is boring.
Is irrelevant. And if it's
open
even
a bank account, etc. Yeah.
And if the history is correct, the way we've been taught it, because even
Is that as well. Yeah.
that's for another show. That's a completely other story.
It's quite funny because I've had an experience with my grandson recently that when he was about two, he got ill and he was moaning and crying and all that sort of thing. So without his parents looking, I picked him up and started zapping him. And then he started chuckling and smiling and that. And his mum noticed and she said, "Oh, you're doing your weird stuff on him, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." Anyway, I put him down. Then about 3 or 4 years later, he got ill again. And I picked him up and I started zapping him. And after a bit, he said, "That's enough, Granddad. I've had enough now." And I went, "Wow." And I put him down because he obviously knew what was going on. He could sense it.
Wow.
And so he realised. And there's loads of kids like that. And even some of these autistic kids and whatever other challenges they've got, I think they're wired up for 5D and they're having to start in 3D and they can't relate.
Right.
But when 5D kicks in, they're going to be well away. And most of them have got gifts anyway.
Well, they have been called, don't they call them the rainbow children? The children
I know a group of, well, the young 20-year-olds, if you like, and they've all got different challenges in some way. And separately, they struggle. But they've all decided to move into this flat together and they become a unit and one helps the other in whatever gifts they've got.
Wow.
And so it's a bit like the program Misfits, where they've all got different things, but they come together and they work as a unit. Yeah. So I've always wanted to go there and put Misfit Mansions outside of their block of flats, but not for a derogatory term, but because
they
come together and they're helping each other, and it's just absolutely amazing. So
how lovely, how amazing. So I mean, what are your thoughts then on? I mean, I know I'm sure we've got some challenges, but I still don't have this feeling of doom and gloom. I mean, I know we've talked before and.
Yes.
I mean, I don't have a TV, so I'm probably the last to hear about what's going on anyway, because you can't avoid it. No. So I probably do live in a bit of a bubble.
Sometimes that's a nice way to live because you're not feeding the fear and stuff, are you? So no
not at all, not at all. And I do not regret it, and I'm not replacing it.
At our level, we perhaps can't do that much about it anyway, other than put the good intentions and thoughts and try to manifest what we want, what we see as a nice world, etc.
Yeah. See, I don't. So this is the thing. I still don't have this feeling of doom and gloom. I still think everything is all gonna work out.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts as to what sort of things are going to be happening soon?
I kind of get this as what's going on now as karma for Atlantis. When they were doing all this dodginess back then, some of them escaped. And by some of them, I mean the ones that were doing the dodginess. I don't know whether you want to call them dark, negative, whatever it might be. And so they escaped. So this is karma for Atlantis. And this is now all about, we have to address all that negativity and corruption and everything else that's been created. And it goes so deep, it's unbelievable. So for me, I have a knowing that all the old systems are going to collapse. and both sides want them to collapse, the bad guys so they can control us and the good guys so that they can wipe out all the corruption. I have total faith that the good guys are going to come out on top. And so when they do, then everything is going to be hopefully utopia. It's like a pendulum. It's swung all that way negative. Yes. And now it's got to come back. And it'll probably swing too far positive over 2,000 years. And it's got to come back again. But hopefully not as high. And it will keep doing that. Because you've got to have duality to be on earth to learn lessons. So, yeah. So I think it is a good idea. I like to keep abreast of what I believe may be going on so that I can look after me. So if I think there's food shortages, I'll go and buy some extra tins of food.
Right.
If I think the banks are going to nick me money, I won't put any money in the bank, just enough to cover my bills and stuff.
Right.
If I think money's going to be worthless soon, I might go and buy a few silver coins or something like that. So, but I'm not feeling the fear. I'm just realizing and being sensible that I need to put things in place so that personally I can get through this. And I might try and look after my own, but my own at the moment think I'm an absolute nutter and should be in a mental institution somewhere because my kids don't believe any of this, you know. Although my daughter,
as you didn't when
indeed, and I don't judge, but I got to work on my daughter recently. She had some issues with her hormones, and the end of every month when she was having a woman's time, she was getting really ill. So I got her on my couch and I zapped her.
Zapped her, I love that.
I didn't know, but she'd been on a pill to stop her having her periods for about 2 years. And I overrode it. And I made her come on. And so the following week, she rang me up and she called me all the names under the sun. And I was lucky, apparently, because the week after that, she would have been on holiday and wouldn't have taken the necessary equipment to sort herself out. So but a reset of hormones. And then since then, things in her life have calmed down and she's not getting ill at the end of every month.
There you go.
And I get ladies come to me and say, oh, I'm going through the change. And they may be 50-ish. And I look at them and go, maybe you are, but I bet you, because of all the trauma you've been through, you've upset your hormones. And let's see if we can rebalance them. And then we'll see if you're going through the change or not. And some still are, but they don't go through it as bad. And others, it isn't their time. And they reset their hormones and their body goes back to factory settings and it all goes away.
There you go. The body heals itself. So it sounds like you're really there to help people deal, face that. I mean, I get it. Our human response is to run away from pain. We want to avoid pain. That's a natural human instinct.
Yeah.
However, sometimes, and not to dwell, so there's two sides of the coin, isn't there? You know, I don't agree with the talk therapy stuff and going on about it and keeping people in that. I can't see how that is healing. However, to be able to face it and heal it and go inwards to release it makes far more sense to me. So it sounds like that's what you're really doing. And so for any of the listeners out there, it's stuff that it's not about talking and telling Kev exactly what's going on. It's about you doing it yourself. Would I be right in that assumption?
Yes, definitely. Because, and when I get soul retrievals and power retrievals and things like that, I get you to do your own because I feel it's even more powerful that you're taking your power back off of your assailant or whoever it might be. And I get you to do your own soul retrieval. Yes, I help to blow it into your body and stuff. But you're bringing it back and you're reintegrating it. And then I get you to go out and do something that you might have loved to have done at that age. So if you was a child, go and draw a picture, jump in a puddle, have a bag of sweets, whatever it might be. And the same as an adult, go and buy yourself a bunch of flowers. Or I don't suggest go out and get peed like, but, you know, but do something that you would enjoy doing as an adult to welcome your soul part back and believe that you are good enough and that you are worthy and that you are lovable, etc., etc. And all this rubbish that goes through our head that we don't think we are, that's holding us back and stopping us reaching our full potential. It's just absolutely unbelievable.
That does seem to be, you know, I think the sum up for everybody is that somehow, and I'm sure nobody escapes this, nobody.
No.
There will be stuff and everybody's gone through different, and it's not about who's had the worst childhood or not. It's not some people, it's almost like it's a competition. Because what could have been just an argument with a friend could have caused as much trauma in a child dealing with that some people going through what we would consider to be absolute hell. You know, it's personal. There's no, you know, yardstick to measure how big the trauma is. Trauma's trauma. And it could be as simple as how it leaves you feeling. If something has happened, that could be somebody said something to you. If it's made you feel in a certain way, it's going to have an effect. And I find that so interesting that there's, you know, everybody has some stuff that is holding them back that can so easily be solved. So for the listeners, so if they're not, watching the video, so they've got your links.
Yeah.
If somebody, you know, out there that's listening in that thinks, you know, I'd like to go and see Kev. Let's see what Kev can do for me. How would they get in touch with you?
The best way is through the website. So www.theuncommonheartfelttouch.com. We can either arrange an appointment in person. We can do it remotely over Zoom, however they wish to do it. I also have a circuit of venues, Leicester, Birmingham, Nottingham, sometimes London and Manchester, and I'm just about hopefully to start one in Sheffield. So, and I'm willing to go anywhere. So if somebody can get 4 or 5 clients together, wherever they may be, I don't mind going down and doing what I call a healing day. And, you know, as long as it covers my costs and stuff like that, I'm up for doing anything. So
yeah. What would you, to the listeners, give a sort of an overview of exactly what you do? You're a healer. Are you what services, I suppose I should call it, do you have on offer?
So I mix shamanic healing with kinesiology, crystals, and energy healing. So when I'm doing the emotional stuff, I would put you in a state of weakness using kinesiology. At the end of it, I would test you for bark flower remedies using it because they help your emotions or to overcome your emotions. But I take you through shamanic scenarios with people. And then the last part is then once we've taken all that negativity out, we have to replace it with positivity. So that's the healing part of it. And then, like I say, I test you for bark flower remedies. And then we'll see if there is something else that we may need to do, because some people who've got autoimmune conditions and things, their central meridian would be out, so I would put that back in. And then once they've gone away and processed that, which normally takes 2 to 2+ hours, I get them to come back, and then we start to do physical fixes with kinesiology. So there are 17 muscle tests I would do, and depending on the results of those tests, your body tells me what it wants to fix and in what order it wants to fix it. And then using lymphatic drainage, running meridian lines, neurovascular points, and so on, that's how we fix it. And we know we fixed it because we retest the muscles and they should all have gone strong.
Wow. So you really are focusing on the mental, the physical, spiritual. And that is a real complete holistic way of healing. Love it.
Yeah. And also with physiology, we can do vitamin and mineral deficiencies, food allergies, all that sort of thing as well. So just to complete the picture.
Awesome. Well, what a complete, and I love this. And this is why I love speaking to people like you, because it really does sound like that people are coming out and adding modalities to what they're doing. You know, whereas before you were either this, you know, everybody's wants a label on their head. Yeah. I'm a massage therapist. People are coming together and there's all sorts of added extras going on and I love it. And this is the way forward. So look, Kev, thank you so much for your time. I could talk to you for hours.
No, thank you, Karen, for inviting me. Lovely.
So I hope the listeners got something from that, that we went there, didn't we? We went a little bit off into the woo-woo, which is absolutely amazing. So, yeah, thanks for your time. And to the listeners, I will be back next week with a Coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of